questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, ow, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn!
It certainly is, and this morning we've got Professor Andreas Neef in the studio. Morena, how are you?
Morena, Rachel, I'm good, thank you. It's the end of the semester.
Yes, exactly. Everybody's probably slowly starting to relax, unless you're out there studying for your exams, and then good luck if that's your situation at the moment. We're talking to you this morning about the dark side of tourism. You're in the Development Studies School in the Faculty of Arts.
That's right.
What is this idea of the dark side of tourism? What's your research area about?
So this study was originally commissioned by Tourism Watch, which is a German NGO that looks into human rights issues around international tourism, particularly in least developed countries. Mm-hmm. And those least developed countries and small island development states, they have reported the highest tourism growth rates recently. So my study looks into what issues arise when tourist resorts are established in countries that are poor, that are post-conflict countries, post-disaster countries, and what are the impacts on land rights of local communities, both indigenous and non-indigenous.
So what instigated the need for this research? What was sort of, driving people to go, actually, we should be looking into this?
So usually tourism is associated with leisure and pleasure. It's the feel-good industry. The World Travel and Tourism Council has even called it the world's peace industry. And recently it has been associated with the Sustainable Development Goals. So everyone talks about tourism in very high terms. But we also know that tourism has an enormous carbon footprint. It has massive environmental impact. What I'm looking at is the human rights aspects and how tourism is actually displacing communities from their customary land, how tourism is taking away water resources, water supply from local communities, etc.
I can't imagine that this is necessarily a new issue, but are we seeing it in different ways in the contemporary climate?
Astonishingly, it's not a very well-known issue. Mm-hmm. And the studies that I conducted in countries like Thailand, Cambodia, Vanuatu really showed a whole new dimension. For example, if you have a disaster in a country, you see investors coming in what we call a form of disaster capitalism, where they see a blank slate, where they see land titles have perished, people have died. So they see it as an opportunity to get in and
I can't help but imagine vultures sort of circling around.
Exactly,
it's a very nasty.
That's exactly the
and
image.
And it's interesting because it's quite often talked about as being this thing that's great for the economy,
right?
In a country that might be struggling,
yeah.
But actually,
so disaster is tourism is seen as a possible driver of disaster recovery, but actually, it can drive some people into even more misery.
Mm.
So, what are some of the real world consequences of tourism in these, cities or countries that have experienced disasters or quite intense events?
So, for example, take Efate Island in Vanuatu. About 80% of the coastal land is now leased by foreign tourism investors.
Wow.
So then Cyclone Pam happened and hotel staff was laid off. And because people had lost all their land to those investors, they couldn't go back to their food gardens. They couldn't go back to their nearshore fishing grounds in order to get the money to recover from the disaster.
Oh God,
so it was very depressing when I went there to do the study.
Yeah.
And when did you go there? Was that relatively recently?
It was 6 months after Cyclone Pam happened.
Wow, okay. Yeah. So that is kind of, the real world consequence of this. Why don't we know much about this?
It's because, the tourism industry wants to keep that illusion of being a peaceful industry, a non-extractive kind of industry that respects human rights. And many tourism operators, actually, they have their own human rights principles, but they only relate to the operational side of the business.
Right.
And they don't look at what has happened before that in the place where the resort has been built, who has been driven away from that land, because mm-hmm. that was often done by governments, by local governments, or by construction companies, and the hotel chains actually want to deny those kind of facts.
So how, I guess, if people are trying to go on holiday, which, you know, fair enough, if you want to go on holiday, how can people sort of be sure that the places that they're visiting or where they're putting their money isn't contributing to these quite toxic situations?
So I think one way would be to favor community-based, family-run businesses over the more enclave-style, large-scale tourist resort complexes. Tourists should also be conscious of the fact that many post-conflict, post-disaster, post-colonial states have very weak recognition of local land rights. So those are the areas where tourists should be very conscious about possible land rights infringements. Mm-hmm. And you can also gather information from reliable sources. There's ethical travel websites like Good Travel. And you can just Google the name of your hotel and see whether it was in the news for the wrong reasons. Recently.
It's always a good place to start.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in the kind of idea of like repatriation and stuff. Is there any way that that can happen through this industry, or is it too big to fight?
It's very big to fight because it's a multi-stakeholder issue where governments are involved with international investors, with international donors, with international development organizations. So it's not just one actor, it's a whole supply chain. And it's very hard to really hold these actors accountable for what they are doing.
Sounds like, you're just sort of scratching the surface of a huge problem there. Yeah, totally. Right. If people want to come and hear more about this, I believe you're doing a public lecture. Is that correct?
That's right. I do a public lecture as part of the university's Spring Week, which will take place on Monday, the 25th of November at 1:30 p.m. That will take place in the university's Central Library and Lecture Theatre B10.
So that's right down the basement level. So
yeah,
you sort of come
right.
in the main stairs and then you go downstairs as well. I'm really interested in New Zealand's tourist industry. Do we have problems like this that we should be thinking about too?
I mean, we have historically, of course, issues around our Maori populations that have been driven away from coastal resources. And so in our own country, I think we have to go farther back in history, but we have definitely issues as well in New Zealand that we need to resolve.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Andreas Neef, for coming in this morning and chatting to us about it. It's a huge topic, but it's fascinating as well. So if people want to find out more, they can head along to the public lecture on Monday, the 25th of November. Thank you for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
That was Ready, Steady, Learn! Thanks to the University of Auckland, the best university.